Okay. Good evening.
Good evening.
And welcome to the regularly scheduled June 21st meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met previously in closed session. We discussed with our labor negotiators, negotiations with our employee groups, CSEA, MEC, SEIU, SLCTA, our confidential employees, and I believe those are the groups. It was discussion only and no action was taken. Do we have consensus on the order of business?
Yes.
We do? Okay. Then we're looking to approve the minutes of June 7th.
I'll move approval.
I'll second.
I have a motion by Mr. Questenberry, second by Dr. Eisengrath Rogers. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Abstain.
So we have five ayes, one abstention, one absent. And that's followed by the approval of the minutes of June 15th.
Second.
Approval by Mr. Buckman, second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Abstain.
Okay, opposed? So we have five approvals, one abstention, and Mr. Unger is absent. Moving to correspondence, at the time the agenda was printed, we had not received any official correspondence. Does any board member wish to cite correspondence that they received personally? Okay, then moving on to public comment. It doesn't appear the board has received any written requests to speak. Is there anyone present that would like to address the board during public comment? Seeing no one, then we'll close public comment and move on to the superintendent's updates. The business and budget update, Mr. Pinkerton.
Before Mr. Pinkerton shares the business and budget update, I just wanted to acknowledge that Mr. Unger contacted me. He was unable to be here this evening as he and the executive director for CSBA are working with the members of the legislature on Senate Bill 799, which is about the reserve cap. So he's there advocating for us as basic aid districts to try and minimize the impact on any type of reserve cap. And he wanted me to pass that along.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Pinkerton.
So as I'm sure the board found out today, the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant in the paper today has basically said that they're going to close by 2025. The board also knows a huge revenue source for the district in terms of those property tax dollars. For us, I would say as a district, you know, since 2001 when the PG&E bankruptcy and the board was affected and the school district was affected, you know, the board has kind of had foresight to put that 10% reserve in to help with these situations. And so, you know, today a lot of reporters, I was on a couple of, you know, KSBY, KCOY, so they're discussing it, talking about it. And what I would just tell the board, I would say from today is that there's still a lot to find out about. You know, though they say they're going to close in 2025, what that really means in terms of property tax and revenues and effects, it's something that we'll definitely dive into over the next 3-4 months to kind of see what that means. Are the property tax revenue is going to slowly decline, or are they going to stay until 2020? There's, again, lots of information that we need to find out. So we'll be kind of digging in that from the revenue side to bring back to the board that information as soon as we can, and then kind of hopefully make a path, chart a path towards the future. But definitely, I think that, again, it's a surprise in that it's finally happening, but I think it's something that the board is, you know, we've talked about as a district for a long time now, and you know, we'll do what we can to protect kids and, you know, make sure our student achievement continues to improve.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, seeing none, then we'll move to Where am I? Ed Services update, Mr. Robinette.
Thank you. Well, school's out. However, summer school is in. And I did a check on attendance today, and we have a full load of summer school students. We have over 450 elementary students attending our four summer school sessions, 100 middle school students, 320 high school students, 135 special ed students in extended school year programs, meaning we've hit over 1,000 kids in summer school. That's one out of every eight students of ours is attending summer school. So good news, and education keeps rolling along.
Thank you. Sure, Mr. Miller.
And things like transportation, meal programs, everything are up and running to support the kids?
Absolutely. We have the lunch program going on and transportation to the sites.
Excellent. Thank you.
Measure D update.
Yeah, so I wasn't there, unfortunately, taking my son to Boise State, where he's going to be attending college next year at a great parent orientation. But I know Mr. Holka and Mr. Palazzo led the board through the study session in regards to future staffing, as well as the RFQ, RFP process. And so those are things that we're going to talk a little bit about later on. We did have five respondents to the RFQ for our design build projects at both Morro Bay High School and San Luis Obispo High School. We've, through the DIR process of grading, and we've actually narrowed it down to four firms that will be issued the RFP next Thursday on June 28th. And so we'll be kind of getting that out, moving the process along. All four firms have local people involved throughout, so it was really good that I feel like we have four really quality people to choose from, and every single one of them has some local tie. So I think it's going to be a really good process for us. Other than that, you know, we're basically Anthony, his crew. I've never seen Steve Stewart so happy in his life before, I think, since he's been here, that he's actually getting to work on construction projects again. But he's running around with his little yellow vest and his hard hat. And so there's just a ton going on. And so he's taken a lot of pictures of everything happening. And so we'll be presenting that to the board kind of after summer. Here's what we did. Here's kind of the process that we went through. And again, there's also an article or an item on the board agenda to kind of address some needs that are coming up as well.
Okay, thank you. There's no board comment, then we'll move on. We have a public hearing. In fact, we have two public hearings. The first, item 7.01, is a tentative bargaining agreement with CSEA. Mrs. Newland.
Yes, so these next two public hearings are an opportunity for the public to be able to weigh in on these items that are later on the agenda.
Okay, thank you.
So you have to open the public hearing.
I'm going to do it. I am opening a public hearing regarding the tentative bargaining agreement with California School Employees Association Chapter 89. Is there any member of the public who would like to speak to this tentative agreement? Seeing no one, then I'll close the public hearing. Bring it back to the board. Okay, item 7.02 is a tentative bargaining agreement with SEIU. I am opening a hearing for a tentative agreement with the Service Employees International Union, Local 620. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this tentative agreement? Seeing no one, then I will close the public hearing. And seeing no board comment, we'll move on. Thank you, Mrs. Newland. Item 8.01 is a resolution, number 191516, Delegation of Signature Authority.
This is an annual event that we usually take as the first resolution of the year, but because we have such a hiatus in the summer, we wanted to do it now so that it's in a place as of July 1st, just delegating a signature authority to your executive team for POs and the various documents that they sign.
Mrs. Sheffer?
If there is no objection, I would move adoption of resolution number 191516, Delegation of Signature Authority.
OK, Okay, I have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer.
Second.
Well, second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Oh, it's roll call. I beg your pardon.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Quessenberry?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Passes 6-0.
Item 9.01 is approval of the 2016-17 Consolidated Application Part 2. Mrs. Shields.
Good evening. The California Department of Education requires the consolidated application for funding categorical programs to be submitted annually. The first part is completed in February, and the final part is completed in June for your approval. The comprehensive application covers three federally funded programs, Title I, Title II, and Title III. Title I funding is intended to meet the educational needs of low-achieving students enrolled in the highest poverty schools. Our district's Title I funds are allocated to our six elementary schools with the highest number of socioeconomically disadvantaged students. Title II is a federal program designed to improve teacher and principal quality through professional development and teacher recruitment. Title III is specifically designed to assist English learners in acquiring English and achieving grade level standards and graduation requirements. The funds are meant to be supplemental to the work and funding that the district already spends through general funding. So San Luis Coastal is eligible to apply for an estimated $1,015,528 in categorical funding. The application has been reviewed and approved by our District English Language Learner Advisory Committee, as well as our District Title I Advisory Committee, and I'm seeking your approval to submit the application tonight.
Thank you. Mr. Moore?
Amy, the thought occurred to me while I was reviewing this. Can you tell me about the three programs and the level of funding? Stagnant, going up, going down?
Pretty stagnant, actually. Title I, we're looking at $685,000, about the same as last year. Title II is just over $200,000, pretty similar. Title III actually went down a teeny bit, if my memory is correct, and we're looking right at $100,000.
Yeah, that was the one that I thought had gone down, and it also, I was struck by the modest amount for Title III.
It's a very modest amount to meet the needs of close to 1,000 students, but the reality is we use a lot of our general funds to pay for the supports and services that we provide to our English learners.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
Good report. I was wowed by a lot of the great improvement that was in there. In the summary, under Title II Part A, mm-hmm. where it talks about teacher recruitment, train, and recruit high-quality teachers, in light of the teacher shortage in California and the rest of the United States, is this the full amount that the district puts towards teacher recruitment, or is this just for the Title II school?
Yeah, this is what we receive in Title II dollars. I'm not involved in teacher recruitment, so I...
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I know that comes from personnel, and I know there are recruitment efforts. They don't take... The efforts that they do in recruitment doesn't come from Title II.
Okay. And I'm thinking we're probably not as bad... I'm thinking we're not as badly hit as some of the other districts in the state.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Is there any additional comment? Okay, seeing none, thank you, Mrs. Shields.
I'll move approval of the consolidated application part two.
I'll second.
The motion by Mr. Millar, second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, that passes 6-0.
Thank you.
Hey, and while you remain there, we'll move to item 9.02, Elementary Student Achievement Report.
Great. Thank you very much. For our student achievement end of year report tonight, I'm going to share some results and trends that we're seeing in elementary and math, reading, and writing. And we're going to begin our report with math. This is the second year. I'm going to kind of set the table for you here first. This is our second year in our elementaries of implementing the Bridges mathematics programs for our kindergarten through second graders, and our first year of implementing it in our third, fourth, and fifth grade. We had originally, common assessments in place for K-5. They were tied to Bridges in K-2, and we were using an online Scholastic math assessment previous to this year. So with the complete adoption in place last summer, we took a look at what the common assessments that were available in the program. We brought in a group of teachers, and we revised those assessments to better align with our trimester grading and our standards-based grading system. So with that, this is going to feel like one more time, but I think the last time, a base year of looking at our end-of-the-year results, K-5 in mathematics. So with that said, there we go. What you have before you shows you, first of all, district on the left, and then it goes up by grade level. The darker green shows exceeding expectations. The lighter green is meeting end-of-year expectations. The yellow is approaching expectations, and that other color is kids that we need to be worrying about that need more time that possibly may need an intervention. So our end-of-the-year data show that 66% of kindergarten through fifth grade students are meeting or exceeding grade level expectations. Grade level data indicates higher percentages, as you can note, of our students who met or exceeded grade level expectations in kindergarten through second grade, where the percentages are actually between 73 and 81%. This may be in part due to the fact that this is the second year of our implementation. As students have continued exposure to the Bridges curriculum and teachers grow in their understanding and efficacy around teaching the curriculum, I would expect to see the percentage of students meeting and exceeding standards to increase. It will be interesting, I think, to compare the results for our third, fourth, and fifth grade students with district SBAC results when they become available to us. Last year, our district average for SBAC, as we measured by the SBAC, was 50%. Our common assessment results, as you can see for the end of this year, show 54 to 57% of our students meeting or exceeding standard. My hope is, and my expectation is that we will see similar growth on student achievement when the SBAC results become available. I'll be sharing those with you in August. So in reading, we'll begin with our benchmark assessment system, or as we call it, the BAS.
Mr. Miller?
Sorry, Amy.
Of course.
I'm trying to parse that out. Are you saying that we can expect to see, let's say, grade one cohort when they are in grade two, we'll see an improvement in the exceeds expectations, or because they've had a longer exposure to the curriculum, or is it going to be a function of more accurate measurement by the SBAC?
No, our SBAC, we don't see any results until at the end of third grade. We don't begin giving the assessment. So when we talk about our kindergarten, first, and second grade, I think we're really talking about teacher efficacy and students' knowledge and understanding in the program and working with the program. So I do expect to see that continue to grow. But when you look at this, you see our kindergarten, first, and second grade students actually scored quite a bit higher than our third, fourth, and fifth. And so in trying to determine what might be the reasons for that, what I can tell you that's factual is our kindergarten, first, and second grade teachers are in their second year. And if they were a pilot teacher, they're actually in their third year of implementation. Whereas our third, fourth, and fifth grade, this is our very first year of utilizing this curriculum. So I anticipate that to go up. But with that said, our third, fourth, and fifth grade results are still at a higher percentage than last year's overall average for SBAC. So I anticipate that to go up.
Okay.
I'm trying to make a connection with the ultimate SBAC with results we haven't seen yet. But you're going to hear me say this a little bit more later, we're trying to correlate how closely do our common assessments line up with SBAC results, and are they informative in telling us where we're going and how close we're getting there. Make sense? Thank you. Okay, so moving on to reading, and our K-2 BAS, or benchmark assessment system. The results you're seeing here, and I showed this in a different way, I wanted to give you a three-year comparison, so you can see the graph on the left shows the results from 13-14, 14-15 is in the middle, and our most recent results are on the far right. So what you can see is 78% of this last year's kindergarten through second grade students met year-end proficiency in reading. Now, it's actually down one percentage point from 2015, but it's still a significant gain from where we were 2 years ago. In the board packet, I decided to include that back in here because I thought you might be a little bit interested in this piece as well. We broke it down by this year's results by grade level. And what I thought was most interesting was the percentage of students reaching proficiency in kindergarten was quite a bit lower at 68% compared to 84% in first grade and 83% of our second graders reaching end of year proficiency. You can also see the percentage of at-risk kindergarten readers is 6 points higher at that 17%. Is everybody with me? It's that sort of mazy color as compared to in first and second grade where that drops to 11% for both of those grade levels. This tells me our first and second graders are well on their way to reading proficiency, and we will need to pay close attention to our incoming first graders who may need additional support, both in class and with leveled literacy intervention, which we do have place in as part of our LCAP for next year. I did a little bit of research today because I just wanted to check in on that particular group of 17%. And we have 87 of those students who we know need additional support who are enrolled in summer school this summer, which is a heavy focus in reading and practicing. Mind you, it's 20 days, but that's something that they wouldn't get if we didn't have that in place for them. So we know that's going to be a support for them this summer. If we move on to third through sixth grade, they take the Scholastic Reading Inventory, or the SRI, and what you're seeing again in front of you is a three-year comparison. Our spring three-year comparison shows you that 71% of our students this year met or exceeded proficiency expectations. After dipping a couple points last year, it's great to see us up by 4% from 2014. With the adoption of the Common Core Aligned Reading Program that we did this spring and ongoing professional development and coaching for our teachers next year, I would again say you can expect to see achievement continue to rise in elementary reading, similar to what I'm about to show you in writing. The final chart here, and it looks very complicated, and I'm going to break it down for you, shows growth in writing over the past 3 years. The first three charts on the left represent narrative writing. Okay. The middle three charts represent informational writing, and the final three graphs represent opinion argument writing achievement. Now, all of our grade levels teach narrative in the first 3 months of school, September, October, well, actually not even a full 3 months. So we would expect those scores to be lower. Most of our grade levels teach information in the middle, the second trimester, and most of our grade levels teach the opinion argument in the third trimester, but that swaps up a little bit in the upper grades. I'm pretty happy to report that we're seeing continued growth by our students in meeting grade level expectations in writing. In narrative, we've grown from 11% back in 13-14 when we first implemented this program, and we're now up to 32% showing end of year expectations at the end of October. In information writing, we've increased student achievement from 25% to nearly double that of 49% of our students meeting end-of-year expectations. In opinion argument, we are seeing an increase in student achievement from 36% to 51%, a 15% growth over 3 years. There is no doubt that increase in our student achievement in writing is directly due to teacher experience and expertise in teaching our writing units of study, and our students increase time and experience in writing. Again, I also believe that a well-coordinated reading and writing program that we will have in place next year with ongoing professional development and on-site coaching is only going to strengthen student outcomes in the future. I would end by saying we look forward to seeing our SBAC results for our 3rd through 6th graders, and based on the outcomes of our common assessments, I'm confident and I'm hopeful that we'll see similar gains in student outcomes on the SBAC. Did I answer any of your questions?
Thank you. Are there any board questions of Mrs. Shields? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much. So, the next item, 9.03, is secondary English language arts and math assessments update. Mrs. McGrath.
Good evening. I'm happy to share with you secondary English and math common assessment data. And tonight I would like to start with middle school math. A summary there of the data that you had presented to you. A couple of pieces to discuss, Amy actually brought up because it's an elementary and secondary goal. When it comes to middle school math, something to think about is that this is embedded now. The assessments are embedded within their curriculum, attached to what they're teaching. There's teacher buy-in. It's exactly the type of assessment that we want to see. It's integrated into what they're doing, and it's aligned both to their curriculum and to the assessment that you'll see at SBAC. There is that correlation that has already been established for us. National research has already shown that the SVMI tasks that we're using for these common assessments they do have a strong correlation to SBAC. You see student growth in almost every area, and the overall growth was somewhere between 8% to 23% in different areas. Kind of our next steps to talk about when it comes to middle school math is there are a few pacing issues. We saw as the year went on, not all teachers completed the last common assessment, so we will be assisting teachers with the pacing of that, and as you know, with a new curriculum, sometimes that takes a little time to get a pattern going. To ensure that all data is complete goes along with that, and then to analyze the assessments and to ensure the alignment within the curriculum and make sure it's matching what they're teaching. So with middle school math, great progress, good growth. I feel like it's really in a good place where we want it to be. The next piece, high school math. In your data, I know you noticed a substantial growth when it comes to Algebra 1 and Algebra 2. We did see a decline in geometry, so we've already started looking at what that could mean. Is it more of a test question issue? Are there issues in geometry that we need to help people with? And there also just want to note that the high school math teachers, there's been amazing collaboration among the teachers. They've really grasped on to the concept that these assessments can be a great way to check along the way to use that information, and they're really having great collaborative discussions around what that can mean for them as professionals and how that can help their students. So excited about where that is for high school math. Our next steps are, again, to kind of further analyze geometry, see if there's something that we need to address there. As Amy mentioned, to look at our SBAC results as they come in, see if we see also that concern with geometry or if it just happened to be more of a test issue. Complete data, we need to help a few people with testing and make sure that it is able to be completed in time and then check for alignment of those assessments to standards and SBAC. But again, feel really strongly about where middle school math and high school math is, how the teachers have embraced it, and how they're using that data to really help impact their instruction in a good place. We have middle school English. So the summary, I'm sure you noticed there's an increase for 7th grade, seemed to be a decrease for 8th grade. I've been really excited about the progress of middle school English teachers this year, how they've really embraced the idea of creating some common units with the assessments attached. They were in the middle of that work this year. And I think we will see a lot of progress with that from now on. The next steps, again, with that would be to check our SBAC results to make sure this correlation exists. We don't have a research-based proven correlation when it comes to English. These are more teacher-created using some released items that we find, but we'll have to check more closely to make sure it correlates to the goal that we're aiming for. And to establish a consistent protocol for testing administration, to look at listening and speaking activities. I know some people think, well, kids that age speak plenty, right? But it's actually some very concrete, very specific examples of how students need to be taught how to articulate, present ideas using multimedia sources and those kind of things. So incorporating those into our courses and activities would be another good step. To analyze our data and kind of strengthen our instructional strategies using PD next year, and then continue with the middle school English teachers around their unit development, creating common calendars and calibrating how they're scoring their writing. So excited about great progress with middle school English this year. The last area being high school English, the process is really being revised and aligned. You know, I kind of debated with some people, should we try to draw conclusions from the data, and really just came to the place of it's really kind of inconclusive to be able to draw, solid summary or conclusions from the data. So I think it will be in a place next year where there are common assessments given at both high schools. I know Mr. Quesemir was asking about that last time, across grade levels at 9 through 12, so that they will have common assessments given per grade level that is aligned to Common Core standards and aiming towards somewhat SBAC. You remember in high school, 11th grade is the only grade level that gives SBAC, so you can't directly correlate 9th, 10th, and 12th to that, but you have a general idea of where you're aiming, knowing that there's an 11th grade test, and that also being kind of just one bar. We're trying to reach further than that as well. So the work around that you'll see there on the next steps, that we're looking at grade level common assessments, assessment calendars being developed, a consistent administration, and we're going to aim our professional development next year with high school English around calibration, so that teachers are scoring narrative and informational and argument in a similar manner, understanding the assessment and SBAC rubric connected to that, a deeper understanding of the standards, and really taking time. I think high school teachers, a lot of the English teachers are excited about getting some consistent data that they can look at, that they can make instructional improvements around, and what that means for them professionally and what it means for their students. So we're excited about that progress for next year. Go ahead.
Mr. Moore.
Thank you. How much, if at all, are these next steps particularly being impacted by two different schedules at the high schools, senior high schools?
It's a definite impact, and it's an obstacle. What we've done, the kind of the resolution that we've come to, is that the assessments will be the same, and we're going to stop trying to get the timing to be exactly the same. It just ends up being, next to impossible to be able to get them to happen the exact same time. Our goal is to really give them at a time that a teacher still has the students when the data comes back. Right. Unfortunately, what was happening sometimes is a switch is happening after the assessment takes place, students leave, then a teacher looks at, you're kind of looking at two ways that data can impact you. It can impact me for the next time I know I'm teaching that topic. Also, the bigger impact is, what can that do for my students? What's that showing me about my students so that then I can go adjust what I'm doing and notice strengths and weaknesses and make adjustments to what I'm doing for them? You lose the student benefit if the students move on or don't have English that trimester or with a different teacher, et cetera. So we decided if the assessments remain the same and we just make the timing work for each comprehensive high school and it won't be the exact same timing, we felt like that would benefit the teachers at each school the most that we could.
But the different composition of classes and students is an effect. I mean, it happens both in the semester system and the trimester. It's just in the trimester, students take only two trimesters of English, so they may actually, are they currently taking a common assessment in a trimester when they're not in English? No.
Okay. So the way we look at it is the two trimesters, we think of that as similar to the two semesters, right? A student is in either two at San Luis High or at two at Morro Bay, and they just might be spaced differently and land differently. And so we just kind of think of it as you have a year of English here, you have a year of English here, you have the same standards, you have the same expectations. So, we should be able to create a common assessment that we can have great conversation around. Just the timing ends up being really difficult.
Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Eisenrath Rogers.
Kim, do you feel like you have buy-in from the high school teachers at both schools for the
a common assessment, the rubric, the scoring? How's that working out?
Yeah, you know what I find is that the majority of teachers are excited about having great collaborative conversations with their teachers and using the data in a productive manner. I think that is the, you know, predominant push, as they're saying, give us, you know, we want to be able to look at this and be productive around it. So I would say it's definitely not everyone. Some people, I think, have mixed feelings about, you know, the use of the assessment, but I think the majority of people are excited about being in a room with other professionals and master teachers and having good conversation around how that can improve their instruction and what they can do for their students.
With math, I can see how you can quantify that. So in English, are we simply doing quantified, you know, giving scores, or are we also giving narrative feedback?
Right, what we're looking at is within English, it would be aligned to three, sometimes four of the standards. So we have our writing standards related to narrative, informational, and argument. There's also research, but that's too difficult to really do in a common format. So we're not using that one in a common format. Then our reading standards. And within those types of questions, it can be short answer type of questions that students could then get back, you know, different types of feedback. And what we're going to do is spend time calibrating so that teachers have a common understanding of when we're in ninth grade, we all have this expectation. And then the information then kind of feeds a teacher of what they can do to then give that feedback to their students and better instruct them from then on.
Challenging, I'm sure.
Challenging.
Thanks.
Mr. Buckman.
This is really not a question, but a comment. It was really helpful, and I've rarely seen it, and so I want to congratulate you and your staff in the presentation where it says, this is what we accomplished, this is what we did well, this is what we didn't do so well, and then this is what we're going to do to fix it. And I just, as a board member, I just want to compliment you because it really helped. And it was really honest.
It was honest.
Yeah, I'd like to piggyback on that because that was going to be my comment, was that I've never before seen information presented in the way that you chose to present this to us. And for someone who's not disaggregating data daily, I don't pretend to have great skills, but I thought you were very brave to just lay it out in words that, you know, we could all understand. This is what worked, this is what appears not to have worked, and then this is, as Mr. Buckman said, what we propose to do about it. I thought it was easy to understand, it was very informative, and again, it was very brave of you to just lay it out that way. Thank you.
You're welcome.
For that. If there's no additional board comment, then we'll move on to the next agenda item with our thanks.
Thank you.
Let me get out of this one. Okay, 9.04, approve tentative agreement with the confidential employees.
So we are pleased to be bringing forward the next four items to you. The confidential employees are our employees that are in the superintendent's office and the personnel office, and they are involved in labor negotiations. So that's the definition of them being confidential. That's not that they're. We have many employees in our organization that are confidential. However, the law points out that these employees are involved in knowledge regarding negotiations, and so by their nature, they are confidential employees. And so we've reached an agreement with the confidential employees to give a 1% increase in their salary for the next 3 years, and should property taxes come in higher than 6% next year or 7% the following year, then they would get additional percentages.
Okay, thank you. This is an discussion action item. Mrs. Sheffer.
I would move approval of the tentative agreement with confidential employees.
Second.
So I have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That passes 6-0.
The next item is our CSEA tentative agreement, and we are pleased to reach agreement with our CSEA group. The CSEA group is made up of our secretaries, our fiscal department, our instructional staff, such as paraeducators. It's our largest classified group, making up several hundred employees, and we have reached a two-year agreement with them on salary for 1% next year, 1% the following year. Their contract ends after 2 years, so they were only interested in going for that two-year period. And again, there's language in there about property taxes exceeding 6 and 7%.
Okay, thank you. Mrs. Sheffer.
I just didn't turn it off. I would move approval of the tentative agreement with CSCA.
I'll second that.
So I have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, a second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 6-0.
Our next group is our MEC, as we call them, the Management Education Council, made up of all of the managers in our organization except for the three, the two assistant superintendents and superintendents. This is also a three-year agreement with 1% per year for the next 3 years, and some provisions in there for property taxes at 6 and 7% in the out years.
Okay, thank you. I'll entertain a motion for...
I just want to make sure that
Mr. Miller.
The vast public who may be watching this understands that when you say additional percentages in the out years, you're actually talking 1% additional if the
property taxes would come in next year at 6%, then there would be an additional percentage. And if it comes in at 7% 2 years out, there would be an additional percentage.
Retroactive to the beginning
of that fiscal year.
Okay, thank you. I just wasn't sure.
Yes.
I think you were using a little shorthand for those of us who know what you're talking about. Thank you.
Absolutely.
I'll make a motion to approve the tentative agreement with the Management Educators Council.
I'll second.
So a motion by myself, second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 6-0.
And our last tentative agreement is with the SEIU group. Our SEIU is made up of our bus drivers, our custodians, all the employees that work down in BG&T, Business Grounds and Transportation. And this is a three-year agreement for 1% in next year, the following year, and the year after that, with the property tax contingency language that if it were to come in at the property taxes were at 6% next year, would be an additional percentage. And if they were 7% 2 years from now, it would be an additional percentage. There's also other language within the SEIU. We did negotiate with other groups earlier. CSEA was brought to you at an earlier meeting. But with SEIU, this was our first meeting, so we had other language changes to the contract in there that you'll see also about evaluations and professional growth and the term of the agreement.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Questenberry.
Approval of the tentative agreement between the Service Employees International Union and School District.
I'll second.
Okay, so I have a motion by Mr. Questenberry, a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 6-0.
Thank you.
Thank you. Item 9.08 is Measure D, approved change order number 1 to bid number 270. Teach and Sunnyside Elementary School slurry seal and asphalt paving. Let me see who my presenter is. Is Mr. Pinkerton? Ah, it's Mr. Palazzo.
I drew short straw, so I get to do the first change order of Measure D. Right? Like I've said many times, the best way to avoid change orders is never build anything. So we are now building things, so change orders are going to be part of our life. However, this is not a bad change order. All of you know, we've got a project going on where we're repaving the Sunnyside campus as well as the Teach Elementary School campus. So campus-wide, we're going to get all new paving or slurry paving that's in good shape. As we were going through that and getting just about time to get the bids opened for that paving project, we received notice from Los Osos that we need to tie into the sewer and we have 6 months to do it. Well, because we can't work between September and August 22nd and October, November, whenever our deadline is, we've got 3 months to do it. So we scrambled to work with several contractors to get some pricing on this, and it was coming in just over our limits where we could negotiate with several contractors pursuant to our bidding guidelines that were held to, that are state-required bidding guidelines. And so it was just over that $45,000 maximum amount to just go out to three contractors for what they call negotiated bids. It fell into the informal bidding process. However, because the contractor doing the Teach in Sunnyside project, the bid that they gave us was under 10% of their original contract on the Sunnyside and Teach project, and they were actually the lowest of the bids that we received for it, we were able to issue it to that contractor as a change order. It did a couple things for us. One, it got us the best price from the bids that we received, but it also allowed that contractor to coordinate the work of this sewer line, which is actually going under some of the paving. So after that long-winded story, all in, this was kind of the best of all worlds to kind of get that sewer line connection done at Sunnyside Elementary School. So presented today is change order number one for the Sunnyside and Teach project. However, it's only at Sunnyside that we're doing the work in the dollar amount of $53,800 and some change.
Okay, Mr. Holcomb, do you have anything to add to that?
I'm rarely in favor of change orders, but this is a great change order. To change a contract even downward, it takes a change order. So it accomplished the work in the least expensive, most expedient manner, so I'm firmly on board.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Questenberry.
This connecting to the sewer, though, it wasn't something that was unanticipated, was it?
Oh, no, we knew it was coming. We had the drawings and everything was ready. We just didn't know exactly when they were going to send us this notice. So, yeah, so it wasn't, it was anticipated, but it wasn't, it was a little bit of a surprise that it just happened to come about 2 days before we opened bids. Okay. So.
I think it's phased across the SOSO, you're in phase, Sunnyside falls into phase two, probably.
Maybe so. And then I think one of our other sites, Monarch and Baywood, are going on as well. And one of those two is actually in the next phase, so we actually have some additional time on that. But we're going to go ahead and try and get all those done this summer. The connections are out there waiting for us, so we'll be ready.
If there's no additional comment, I'll entertain a motion.
Change order
number one. Okay. And I'll second. So we have a motion by Mr. Questenberry, a second by myself. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That passes 6-0.
Okay. And on another note, I've never seen Steve Stewart tired. Steve Stewart's tired right now. So
it's good tired.
It's a good tired. It is. So thank you.
Mr. Pinkerton, let's see. I'm sorry. I lost my spot.
It's okay.
9.09. This, again, Measure D. You are requesting authorization to issue a request for proposals for project management services.
Yes. So as I believe Mr. Palazzo kind of led the board through a discussion during the Measure D study session, but basically we have purposefully on the staff side stayed lean as we've kind of gone through this first phase, planning, getting things set up, with our ultimate goal at the end of this project, at the end of all of our Measure D, that we keep our soft costs as low as possible so that we can put more money into our schools, into the hard costs, into actual construction. So we've stayed lean through this first year and a half of Measure D and process and all the things that we're doing. With everything that's now kicking in this summer, We're beginning to see some tired staff, it's definitely time to kind of look at our staffing levels, what we're doing, ramp up, especially once we get the RFP established, once we get those design build contractors on board. So in talking with Mr. Holcomb, Mr. Palazzo, I think our goal in terms of adding staff is not necessarily to bring in internal people through our personnel commission, hire them on, but that we first start by looking at how can we add that additional staff, in particular project managers, one at San Luis Obispo High School, one at Morro Bay High School, through potential outside businesses. And so what this RFQ will do is this will allow us to go out and kind of see what's out there. See what project managers are out there, whether it be, you know, somebody individually having their own business, maybe it's a bigger firm that can give us project managers, we can get some pricing, we can kind of see where we're at. So by the board approving this tonight, this will allow us to kind of take that step and begin to look at, you know, kind of the next phase of our staffing for our Measure D projects.
Okay, Mr. Moore.
Well, just first of all, I want to thank you and your staff for the Measure D presentation. That makes this far more comprehensible in what your intentions are. And I bring that up in part because, again, the viewing audience mm-hmm. may see us take pretty quick, you know, action on these things, but it's because the Measure D study sessions have really, speaking for myself, given a good solid basis for understanding this. So I would move approval of authorization to issue requests for proposals for project management services.
Okay, so I have a motion by Mr. Millar, a second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Is there any additional board comment? Seeing none, then those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. Item 9.10, Measure D, authority for change order approval.
So as Mr. Palazzo and Mr. Holcomb, you know, change orders can be good and bad, right? If they're negative, if they're fantastic. Over the course of the next few months, though, we don't have a board meeting. And so a lot of these projects are time-specific that are going to get accomplished this summer. And so by not having the board able to approve a potential change, kind of necessitated the fact, hey, listen, we don't have another meeting until middle August. We better at least have some ability to have potential changes, things that come up in the field that we have to address, keep that contractor moving so that we can get those projects accomplished. Specifically, for example, C.L. Smith would be a classic example where we're taking off the siding, where we're adding stucco. As we pulled that siding off, we found that there were doors remaining, that they had electrical panels, things that they had just kind of put the siding over. Well, while that may work for siding, it doesn't work for stucco. And so now we're going to have to go in. We have to remove the doors. We have to, you know, fix the structure there, do the things we need to do. Water faucets around some of those buildings didn't have the basically the water backing to keep the moisture out, and so we're going to have to go in and fix those. So there were a few things that came up during that process that were unanticipated that you would never think would be there. And so having the board give me the authority to make these kind of decisions, again, it can only be up to 10% of the overall cost of the project and move forward. And so kind of the process of how that happens, normally these things are found in the field. So we have our project manager, Steve Stewart, in this case right now, dealing with most of the summer projects. He then brings up the issue. It comes up to Mr. Palazzo, who, you know, looks at it, discusses it, then it comes to Mr. Holcomb and myself, and we kind of debate it, go through the, you know, okay, do we do this? How do we do it? What happens? You know, we're very fortunate to have Mr. Holcomb, have Mr. Palazzo with their skills, their, you know, knowledge level of what to do. And then basically that then kind of goes back to Steve. They write the change order, they make the adjustment, and work it out with the contractor. So there will be some. There's going to be some T.L. Smith in particular. We know that is happening right now. And so everything else, I think, is kind of moving smooth. We had at Morrow Elementary, where we're doing the new water line into the campus, there was a particular valve that we needed to purchase out in the street when we put the new line in. So there are a few, a couple things like that, not major things at this point, but things that we're going to definitely have to address before we have the board able to approve those in August. So tonight, I'm just asking the board to allow us to kind of make those decisions over the next 2 months prior to board approval. We will then bring them to the board for overall approval in August. And kind of that, you know, basically through these summer months that it's needed.
I have a question.
Mrs. Sheffer.
So just to be clear, that what we're approving tonight is just this authority. It's time limited. It is just through August. It is not through the duration of the project. Is that correct?
I don't think that there is a duration on this in particular right now, but I would say it could be. We could put a duration on it through the summer.
Yeah, I just wasn't clear because you're speaking about over the summer when the board doesn't meet as frequently. Mm-hmm. But then, are you expecting this to
continue? I think the only other time throughout the year where if it was something that was a dramatic, maybe we just had a board meeting tonight and tomorrow, there's something, you know, happens in the field where we have to make a decision in a day type of thing, and whether we wait two more weeks before the board meeting, it would give us the opportunity to make that decision if it absolutely had to be made. But the normal process for change orders is going to be like what happened tonight, where we're going to bring them in front of the board to do them. So I think it's still, even if it's not through the summertime, I think it's still in our best interest for me to have that ability to move a project forward if needed. I don't, Mr. Holcomb, I don't know that there's times in the field where this is going to come up where we can't wait necessarily for 2 weeks for a board meeting. It would be rare.
Yeah, my attitude would be that as long as you have all eyes on board, that you go ahead and grant this authority. You know, it's commonly done where we okay them knowing that it's really not legal. But to keep the job moving, you hang out there. And I think that's worse than having the authority looking through it and then providing the board full information. In some of our previous bid outs, we asked for and the board authorized that we put inside the bid 10% allowance. I much prefer this methodology because then the contractor doesn't look at that and say, that's my target. That money's in my contract. It's not in their contract. But boy, once that number's written down, it's a human motivation to see if they can get it all. I prefer to make that a little harder. While this seems like it's less controlled, it's actually more controlled. But I think, again, that if the board require that every ounce of that be presented to them and justified, even though it's approved, what you're really saying is you trust your people to do that. So I'm firmly on board that you grant the authority permanently with the provision that you're fully informed on every change order cause, so that you can read a narrative and know what's going on. So that'd be my opinion.
I just have a question about then. So it's assuming we did give that authority to Mr. Pinkerton. Would it, at the next meeting, would it come before us in a similar fashion to this, just as a maybe an informational piece? Or
I think it would come to the board just like you see in 9.08 as a change order approval for the board. Yes, no, Mr. Holcomb? What do you think?
Well, it's kind of like you can't have it both ways. You can't give somebody approval or the right to approve it, and then it's not approved until it's approved. That's kind of a...
So I'm just saying for informational purposes?
Informational purposes, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
So that if someone in the community asks one of your board members, what's this? Are you guys giving away money? You'll have read the narrative and can justify it. And if you want to grill me over it, I'll promise you, I'll look at every one of them in depth.
So those will be brought to the board meetings after the fact?
Right.
A narrative, a discussion, a informational piece? That's really what I'm asking. Is it going to be done in a formal setting, or is this going to be something that's going to be emailed to us?
It should be in the board packet, I guess.
Yeah.
Mrs. Holmes?
I'm thinking that if you think about your purchase orders and warrant approvals, this is sort of a similar thing. We process those in the normal course of business, and they're issued every day. And then you ratify those actions after the fact and say they're okay. And if we would bring these change orders that Mr. Pinkerton might approve to you in the format that you see item 9.08, and you'd see an approval and you ratify it rather than approve, you'd get an official action that way. And if something comes along and you disagree with how that's proceeding, then that's a matter of discussion between you and the superintendent and Mr. Pinkerton.
Thank you. I would be comfortable with that.
Mr. Buckman.
Let me ask. Ron, is this common practice? Have you seen this before?
Yeah, it is even codified in California law that you can grant that authority. So it is quite common.
And is it vested in an individual, or is it vested in a group like the project manager?
Well, it's normally vested in an individual, but I think Mr. Pinkerton's made a good point that that all hands on board will look at it. In other words, we want to provide, I don't want to say passive resistance, so that it doesn't happen at a low level where somebody says, sure, get the money. And so it just takes more and more effort and more examination to make sure it's warranted. So you may want to say the authority is granted up to a certain dollar amount, because it is the percentiles that's so tricky there. Is if we have a $30 million design build contract, and you may say, well, we're not really comfortable with you giving a $3 million change order. So it may be that you want to put a dollar limitation on it.
But what I would say to that, too, though, is, again, our normal operating procedure should be how it happened tonight. It should be something that comes to the board. Hey, we have a change order board. Approve that tonight. Okay, tomorrow, contractor, go to work type of thing. And that should be, we should be able to do that over the course of the year, because we have board meetings every other Tuesday night. And so for me, having this is more of okay, there's only one board meeting in December, and we're into the second week, and there's a project, and we have to make a decision. I don't have another board meeting until mid-January. A decision has to be made. I don't have the authority to tell the contractor to move forward, so this would allow me to do that. So I do like the idea of bringing it back to the board, kind of like the purchase order, you know, type of things, which just so that you see it, you ratify it, you know, with whatever the costs are, and you know, we're transparent, we're letting everyone know, the board knows what those things are. But this is just a way, just in case something happens. I mean, a $30 million design build project is going to happen over 6 years. So there's not going to be a single change order that's going to happen that's going to be, you know, $3 million during that time period. And if there was, I would be bringing it to you for your approval prior to doing those things, right? So I think this was just really necessitated out of the summertime, out of the fact that we're not going to have another board meeting until August, and we already know we have a valve that we need to purchase for $4,000 at Del Mar Elementary School, and when we took the siding off, we found doors. And we saw, you know, basically you could see through into the classroom from the outside with the siding gone. So those are issues that we know we're going to have to fix prior to August, our next board meeting. So I need to have the authority to at least make sure that we get those projects done before school starts. But this will be absolutely the goal, is to have change orders just like you saw them tonight. Come to the board, see here's what's happening, those types of things.
Mr. Millar.
I'm in favor of doing it this way, and not in small part because of what Mr. Holcomb said about posting a percentage. That number will live on forever. However, I would be more comfortable with designating one person with a limited amount. I'm okay with just not being definitive in time. But, you know, ratification means that the board hasn't approved until we ratify. Mm-hmm. And the trouble with the delay is, mm-hmm. as things happen and accumulate, then the latitude the board has to not ratify basically is gone. So I would accept the way this is presented with you increasing your empire and having this authority.
Yeah, great.
But I would like to see prompt, and I expect that, like we
did
tonight, a prompt report to the board and prompt ratification so that we don't have a cumulative situation.
Absolutely.
Mr. Bachman.
So I think I'm in agreement with most of what Walter's saying, but in listening to Mr. Holcomb, I'm kind of intrigued by the concept of an up-to amount, so approval for up-to, and possibly designating or requiring. So in a lot of businesses, it takes two signatures to approve a check, and so there's a check and balance on that. And so I'm thinking for this summer. I think we just need to go forward with this for now. But I'm wondering whether we would be interested as a board to revisit this a little later on, say in the fall, and come up with an up to amount, and then a second signature, if you will, on it. So it's just not all falling on Mr. Pinkerton.
Well, I would be interested in reviewing it or in revisiting it in the fall, but in a perfect world, all change orders would occur because minds changed and a decision, it was being proposed that a switchgear needed to be upsized or something on a project that you could anticipate and you could act on beforehand. I think what Mr. Pinkerton is talking about is changes, field condition changes that happen and you need to take some immediate action. You know, like in the case of you're grading along and you break a water main and there are additional costs involved with that, but what are you going to do? You can't wait for a board meeting. Someone on the site then has to say, yes, you're authorized for an additional cost to fix this. And that's, I believe what he's saying is that for things that come up over the summer where immediate decisions need to be made or decisions need to be made within a day or two and there's no time to get to us, that he be authorized to approve those changes. And I don't have any problem with that.
Yes.
Up to 10% of the contract.
Okay. So if I can, I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know, in the best spirit of things, in theory, we're negotiating ups and downs. It takes the same authority to reduce a contract that it takes to increase a contract. So in the world that I've lived in, our project managers are out there going both ways, bringing those results in. Because if you have an opportunity to eliminate a valve, we want that credit. And so, of course, that would be a change mm-hmm. order. We'd want to say, yeah, leave it out, sign here, and that becomes a negative. So I think it's important, and probably revisiting it and writing a little more sophisticated policy and checks and balance like Mr. Buckman, I think that's an appealing idea. So maybe you want to sunset it and revisit it, and we come to you with a better, more sophisticated plan.
So how does the board feel about granting the approval to Mr. Pinkerton tonight and revisiting the issue at the second board meeting in September?
So, yeah, I would make a motion that we follow the course of action as proposed in item 9.10, Measure D authority for change order approval through the summer at a maximum of 10%, and then revisit it in the fall when staff may be able to come back with some stronger wording or different.
Do you want to nail down a date, or do you want to just say in the fall?
I would like it as soon as possible, Madam Mayor.
So how about the second meeting in September?
I will say like second meeting in September.
It sounds like it gives them time, you know, to get back to school.
Great. Absolutely.
Okay.
And still it's will still be timely for us.
So that would be my motion.
Okay. I'll second that motion. So we have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by myself. Those in favor? Aye. Opposed? That passes 6-0.
Thank you.
Okay, let's see. We're moving on to the action consent agenda, so please let me know if there's anything that you would like to have pulled. Item 10.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Okay. 10.02, disposition of surplus property. 10.03, acceptance of donations. 10.04, approval of purchase orders. 10.05, appointment of representatives and alternatives to athletic leagues for 2016-17. Item 10.06, approval to submit Morro Bay High School and San Luis Obispo High School Agricultural Career Technical Education Incentive Grant.
I move approval of items 10.02 through 10.06.
I'll second. Okay, so I have a motion for items 10.02 through 10.06. Motion by Mr. Millar, second by Mr. Questenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That passes 6-0. Item 10.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Mr. Questenberry.
This was just a question about the number of special ed teachers. Is this, are we hiring due to greater enrollment, or is this that we've had that much of a turnover?
Most of the hires are due to a turnover. However, we have had a few increases. We have had increases in student enrollment in special education, and this isn't this isn't unique to us at this time of year. These are hard positions to fill, and today I got an email from a district to the north that was pleading with us that they need 3 special education positions filled, and a district to the south that needs 10 before the beginning of the school year, and they're pleading, hey, does anybody have anyone out there? So this is pretty indicative of what you're seeing right now in all the other districts, but ours are due a lot to people leaving, moving out of the area or moving to other districts or whatever they may be doing, and an increase in enrollment.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. With that, I move approval of item 10.01.
Okay, motion by Mr. Questenberry, second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 6-0. Do we have any reports or any items for the advance agenda? Seeing none, do we have any reports by board members? Okay, seeing none, this meeting is adjourned.